Or if you don't know where Nehemiah chapter 4 is, you go to the book of Psalms that's in the middle of your Bible, and you go back a couple books. I'm not sure exactly how many, but I have absolutely loved the book of Nehemiah. Last Sunday when I was here, I talked about how they started doing the work. And Matt, it was terrible because the first people that started working, doing the rebuilding, were preachers. That's a scary thought. But not just the preachers, it was the goldsmith, the perfumers. Can you imagine having a perfumer on your team, Matt, and you're building walls with a perfumer? What does a perfumer do? I mean, you know. But the picture was everybody had a job and everybody was doing their job, and their goal was to rebuild the wall, mile and a half to 2.5 miles around Jerusalem, so they would be protected. They were rebuilding the gates. They would be rebuilding areas where there had been damage. And so that's where we were last week. We get to Nehemiah 4, and things have changed. They're working on building, but what creeps into the situation is opposition. You see, the thing that's so hard for us to believe is that there are some people against what God wants to do. It's that way in anything. There are people against wanting to improve a city. There's people against churches growing and making a difference. You don't think so? If you don't think so, you have not been in the world long enough. But I found some statistics because the title is Keep On Going. If you're in the business world and you're facing opposition, you keep on going. If you're in the church world and you're facing opposition, you keep on going. But the problem is too many people don't keep on going. Do you know that 35% to 40% of ministers last less than 5 years? They don't even make it to 5 years being pastors. They quit. Another study shows this. 60 to 80% of pastors quit before they make it to 10 years. And I can tell you right now, starting out, a lot of the guys that started with me have fallen by the wayside. Now, why? Why do they quit? Well, conflict inside the church, outside the church, discouragement. People don't care. Why would anybody want to pastor a church that didn't want to do anything and didn't care about reaching their community? Pastors care deeply about that, and it's just like throwing water on them if they don't care. Suffering, maybe the family is suffering financially or emotionally or family. I mean, pastors are normal. Burnout, loneliness. But it is just amazing to me that most pastors never see their 10-year anniversary. That's not a good statistic. Now, worse than that, in America now, churches are closing at a record rate. As a matter of fact, in 2019, 4,500 churches closed. They only started in 2019, 3,000 new churches. That means you lost 500 churches. Listen, it is a crisis in our world today, especially in the United States, with the church. Now, I read a guy, and I want you to listen to this, and this is so good. A guy named Kerry Neilwith, he's a pastor actually in Canada, and he's shared 5 good reasons to close your church. Okay? That's not what you normally think a preacher would say, but there are good reasons to close your church. The first one is this. The real mission is lost. In other words, if your church doesn't remember that the reason that they exist is for those who don't come yet, when you don't make disciples. When you lose the vision, when you lose the mission, you go from being a church that is growing to being a church that's in survival mode. And when you're in survival mode, you know what that means? The end is very near. A church can't continue in survival mode for very long. The second reason he said the church, now listen to this, the church cares more about itself than the people it's called to reach. When the church cares more about the members than they do the lost people, they've missed the mission again. What happened when the shepherd lost one sheep? He had 99, but what did he do for the one? Look for him. We need to understand it's not about caring only about what members need and want. It's about those who don't come yet. You don't build a church for those who come. You understand that? It should be for those who don't come yet. The third thing, its members hate the world. So what are you talking about, Bill? Let me tell you this. You're a walking advertisement to the world about what you love. I never wear any kind of statement about what I believe politically or anything like that. You say, Bill, why? Because that person that I might be against is the very person I want to reach. I'm a walking advertisement. If I go around telling everybody what I'm against, do you think that lost person who I mention what I'm against and he's or she is a part of that, are they going to listen to the good news? Absolutely not. Understand, it does matter how you act and what you advertise. Very important to remember. But a church that is against the world, because you say, Bill, we're supposed to be against the world. Yeah, you are. We can talk about it. But the lost world out there needs to think that you love them and want to share the good news of Jesus Christ with them. Do you understand what I'm saying? You don't go out there and tell lost people, oh, we're glad you're going to hell. No, you don't. You love them in spite of what they do or do not do. If you hate the world, that's a bad sign. Number four, preserving the past is more attractive than embracing the future. When we're all excited about the past, you don't have a future. You know, I went to a church in St. Louis, great church, that had been dying for 20 or 30 years. And during that time there, it was the first time it had grown in years. But the sad thing was nobody knew it was even dying. Till we looked at the numbers, we had plenty of money, we had people coming, you know, all that. But the truth was, we were dying, they were dying, didn't know. So we had to do everything possible to keep going up, not going down. And when you become more excited about what used to be than what can happen, you're going backwards, not forward. You know, same way in a community. If the community remembers the good old days, they'll never see the good old days in the future. Fifth thing, money isn't remotely tied to the mission. I've been in some churches where they thought the goal of the church was to become a bank. Now, you need to have money in your account, but let me tell you what, when we were looking at next year's budget, you know where we go up almost every year? Children and youth. Why? That's the lifeblood. It's not, you know, it just is. Your money needs to be tied to those things, and if the money isn't tied, I mean, I'd rather have children's ministries in my own office, to be honest. So, let's look quickly at chapter 4. Keep on going, number one. I'm not going to read the whole thing because I'm short on time. Keep on going when people are angry with you. Look at verse 1. Sanballat was very angry when he learned that we were rebuilding the wall. He was very angry. Why? Because they were rebuilding the wall. God had told them to rebuild the wall. God had sent Nehemiah to rebuild the wall. And you wouldn't think that anybody would care. But they did. The enemies. There was a guy named Sanballat. Sanballat was not a Jew. He probably benefited financially by the people coming to Jerusalem. And if they ever built a wall, it's a good chance that he was on the outside of the wall and he would have been hurt financially. So he decided that he was going to be against the people of God. We need to understand that when people get angry about us doing the will of God, we keep going. We don't stop. We keep going. Sanballat was not a nice guy. As a matter of fact, you can look back two chapters in chapter 2, verse 10. In chapter 2, verse 10, it says, "But when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite officially heard of my arrival, they were very displeased that someone had come to help the people of Israel." And so we need to understand in our Christian lives, in our business lives, in our community lives, there's just going to be some people who are going to hate us. There's not a thing you can do about that. That church, they're trying to change the looks of our community. We sure are. We need to understand not everybody is going to be happy when we are successful. And here's the only concern I have. The church, and when I say the church, I'm talking about you and me. The church should never, ever, ever listen to the outside world. And we should never, ever, ever stop working. See, that's what I love about the picture. They kept on working. Now Nehemiah had to deal with the opposition, but he kept on working. And we need to understand not everybody's going to be happy with our success. Not everybody's going to be happy with your success. People are jealous. Some people are threatened by another person's success. When in actuality, Christians ought to be happy for one another when they succeed. We need to understand some people feel excluded. But we should always understand, we should always do the will of God, even when people are angry with us. Now, no one likes anyone to be angry with them, but we need to not be surprised. We need to not get angry back. Here's the main thing. We just keep working. They can be angry, screaming at us. Just keep working. I'm not going to spend the time to argue, talk. We just do God's will. So Nehemiah was that kind of guy. Second thing, you keep going when people make fun of you, when people criticize you, when people say ugly things to you. You still keep going as a believer in the church and in your personal life. Look at verses 1b through 3. It says, he flew into a rage. He was ticked. And he mocked the Jews, saying in front of his friends, you know, your critics never talk in private. They talk in groups, and they're usually groups of critics. He says, he flew into a rage and mocked the Jews, saying in front of his friends and the Samaritan army officials, what does this bunch of poor, feeble Jews think they're doing? Do they think they can build the wall in a single day just by offering a few sacrifices? They were making fun of them. They were trying to discourage them. They were saying, hey, you just can't build a wall in one day. They were attacking them, and it says, do they actually think they can make something of the stones from a rubbish heap and charred ones at that? They are ridiculing. They are making fun of the people of God who are trying to do the will of God. Look at Tobiah the Ammonite, who was standing beside him. You know, the critics are there. They're making fun. Look at that. Look at that church. They're trying to remodel. They're trying to do this. He says that they stood around. They remarked, the stone wall would collapse if even a fox walked along the top of it. We need to understand as Christians, as the church, there are going to be people be making fun of what we do. There are going to be people criticizing us. There are going to be people making ugly remarks. They're going to tell people, you know, I'm just glad I survived COVID here. You know, I'd hear around town, that church, they don't wear a mask. Then I'd hear that church, some of them wear a mask. And our rule was, don't ever put yourself in danger. If you come and want to wear a mask, wear a mask. If you don't wear a mask, try to stay away from people. I was talking to a preacher at camp this week, young guy. And I just said to him, I said, man, I'm so glad I'm not your age when I went through all this. And he said, it was hard. People beat him up. The pro-maskers beat him up. The anti-maskers beat him up. And bam, bam, bam. And he's a young guy. The only difference was he was a big guy. He played football at Baylor, and I wouldn't mess with him. But anyway, we need to understand there will be people who criticize what we're doing. There will be people who say, make fun of what we're doing. There will be people. There are going to be all kinds of people doing that. You know what we have to keep doing? We keep working. You just keep on working. You don't ever stop working. Even when people make fun of you, you keep on working. Let me tell you what. You think you get made fun of? You ought to be a pastor. Man, I can go in places and I can hear what they're saying. I can walk in somebody's house, man, they're hiding all their liquor and all their stuff. I don't care. I mean, you know, as long as you don't offer me. You know, people, it's the preacher. Like, I have no life. Like, I don't have fun. You know, it's just, we've got to understand. People are going to be that way. You keep on going, even when people make fun of you. As a parent, you teach your kids to keep on serving God, even when people make fun of you. That is where it is so incredibly important. Third thing, keep on going and respond with prayer. Look at verses 4 and 5. Then I prayed. Okay, all these people are angry with him. All these people are making fun of him, criticizing him. Does he retaliate? No. What does he do? Look at verse 4. Then I prayed. When people attack you, when people make fun of you, what do? You pray. Now, if you'll notice, his prayer is a little stout. I prayed this prayer, but it was not in the right spirit. Hear us, our God, for we are being mocked. May their scoffing fall back on their own heads, and may they themselves become captives in a foreign land. Do not ignore their guilt. Do not blot out their sins, for they have provoked you to anger here in front of the builders. It's a pretty tough prayer. Some of y'all are saying, I'd like to pray that. Don't forgive their sins, God. Don't do this. Now, you got to understand, that's Old Testament. You're not Old Testament. Did you know that? People will come up and they'll say, Pastor, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. If you're in the Old Testament, you're not Jewish. That didn't apply to the church today. And back then, God had already pronounced judgment on them for what they had done to the people of Israel. They were already condemned. And it was very common in that day to just say, hey, God, sick them. Because they were going against what the people of God wanted. But the biblical principle that we have, Jesus didn't say, hate your enemy. What did he say? Love your enemy and pray for them. Uh-oh. Yeah. You're not Old Testament. If you're Old Testament, you're not saved. You're a Jew and find a synagogue. If you're New Testament, it's grace. And everybody I know wants grace. Don't you want grace? I mean, grace is not something you deserve. So Jesus said, hey, pray for your enemies. Love them. Didn't mean you have to be friends. You just treat them with respect. And I love the picture there that he prayed. So what do? When someone starts to attack you, you pray for them. Now here, and you can look at on your own time. I don't have time. But in Romans 12, 19 through 20, it basically says, leave vengeance to God. If someone's attacking you, you just give them to God. And you just say, they're yours. But prayer is how you respond to critics, mean people. You don't tell them what you think. When you begin to be mean back, guess what? You're just like them. When you tell them like how it really is, like I say all the time, when I hear people say, Pastor, I need to be honest with you, that just means they're fixing to chew me up out of honesty. That's not biblical, okay? Give your enemies over to God in prayer. Say, God, you take care of them. They're accountable to you. They're your problem now. All right, fourth thing. Keep on going with enthusiasm. Verse 6, at last the wall was completed to half its height around the entire city. They're halfway done. And then it says, for the people worked with enthusiasm. Let me tell you something about enthusiasm. It's contagious. And one thing I can say about our counselors at camp this week, we were dead tired. We were sick and tired of being tired. We don't sleep. But let me tell you what. They were enthusiastic about the kids in the camp. That's why we win. During VBS, it's real easy to lose your joy. But man, that's when you work with joy. These people got to the halfway part because of their attitude, their enthusiasm. I want you to be involved in church, not because you have to, not because someone pressures you, because you want to. Enthusiasm. It's contagious. We're going on a mission trip in about 3 or 4 weeks. I don't even know when. And it's the hardest week you'll spend, but it'd be the best week you spend. And the key to it all is enthusiasm. If you go to Sunday school or life groups, we call them, if you go to worship and you're not enthusiastic, that's on you. It's your problem. And guess what? It's contagious. It's contagious. Keep on going with enthusiasm. Understand, when people criticize you, you just work harder. All right. Fifth thing. Keep going when they threaten to fight you. See what happens in verses 7 and 9. They talk about fighting. But when Sanballat, to Tobiah, and the Arabs, the Ammonites, and the Ashdites, basically, if you look at each one of those groups, the enemy is surrounding Jerusalem where the work is taking place. The enemies, the non-Jews, are on the outside. And here's what they're doing. They're threatening a fight. It says, they heard that the work was going on ahead of them and the gaps of the wall were being repaired. They were furious. They all made plans to come and fight against Jerusalem and throw it into confusion. But we prayed to our God and guarded the city day and night to protect ourselves. In other words, when you get there and you're surrounded by your enemies, you need to keep on going even though they're threatening you. And see, what happens is we start going, oh no, oh no. And everybody quits working. But you just keep, you don't ever quit working. If they're threatening to come, Nehemiah will show us what he's going to do. But they're halfway through. The people are tired, but they're still building. And that is so important for us to remember. You never, ever quit building. It says they made plans to come in a fight against Jerusalem and throw us into confusion. And then there's that very important word, but. But we prayed to our God and guarded the city day and night to protect ourselves. So what did they do? They prayed and they worked and they guarded. You see, you got to keep on going when people threaten to fight you. You just keep on building. The problem with the church today, the problem so many churches in our area, so many churches in our state, and even ours, are because we don't keep working. We get sidetracked. Nehemiah didn't do that. You need to keep working. And that is so incredibly important. Now pray, but keep on working. Oliver Cromwell used to say, we will trust in God and keep our gunpowder dry. In other words, we believe in God, but we're going to keep the guns ready. We're ready. All right, 16. Keep on going when you feel discouraged. You get to verse 10 and they get discouraged. You see, church work is hard work. It can be discouraging work. Now, look in verse 10. Verse 10 is a beautiful verse. It says, the people of Judah began to complain. They're tired. They're halfway through. And usually when you get halfway through is when you start struggling. You're running a marathon. Okay? Halfway through doesn't feel good, does it? You know? You're hanging on. But look at verse 10. It says, the people of Judah began to complain. The workers are getting tired, and there is so much rubble to be moved. We will never be able to build the wall by ourselves. What are the causes of discouragement in your life, the church? Four things. One, we get tired. The newness wears off. We get tired of building. We get tired of working. We get tired. Now, it's interesting, in verse 10, he kind of stops to work because he has to regroup. And one of the teachings that you need to understand is when you get tired, you need to sometimes quit working and do something else just to get a little joy. That happened last night. We had a life group party, and we stopped. You know, we've been working all week long. I was tired, but we had this life group party. And there's two reasons I like going to our life group, and everybody ought to be in a life group. I went to a life group. One, the food. Now, the food got me at 3 o'clock this morning because I ate so much of it. It's called gluttony. But the other thing was, we played games. I bet I laughed more last night than I've laughed in a long time. We've got some people in our life group who cheat. Coach back there and Sam, and they recruited somebody else. And you know, but I tell you what. Even though it kept me out late last night, I'm better today because I laughed. Pickleball, it's my release. Laughing is my release. I've worked hard 2 weeks in a row. I'm not asking for pity. VBS camp, okay? I'm going to see my kids today. I'm breaking. I can barely wait to see them. I will be a better person when I come back with Liam tonight. But we get tired. You get tired at your job. You get tired at your... And that's when you get discouraged if you're not careful. Second thing, we forget our vision. See, they forgot their vision. And there is so much rubble to be moved. Well, your vision is to fix it. To get rid of the rubble. You lose your vision. You say, oh, it's just too much. We can't do it. Okay? Third thing, we lose our confidence. Verse 10, they say, we will never be able to build the wall by ourselves. We're done. We're over. We can't build the wall. And then the fourth thing, they lose their security. If you look at verse 11, it says, meanwhile, our enemies are saying, before they know what's happening, we will swoop down on them and kill them and end their work. They start losing. When you start losing your security, when you're tired, When you lose your vision, the reason churches die, they forget why they exist. They start just playing church instead of being the church. Man, how do you deal with discouragement? Let me give you three. You get your efforts unified. You can see that in verse 13. Our unifying verse is the Great Commission. Regardless if times are good or bad, we make disciples. The second thing in verse 14, when you get discouraged, you take your eyes off the rubble and you put them on Jesus. Look at verse 14. In verse 14 it says, then I looked over the situation, I called together the nobles and the rest of the people, and I said, don't be afraid of the enemy. When you start looking at the enemy and getting afraid of the enemy, you're looking at the wrong person. Look what he says. Don't be looking at the enemy. He says, remember the Lord, who is great and glorious, and fight for your brothers and your sisters and your wives and your homes. Focus. When you get discouraged, what are you focused on, your problem or God? When you're being attacked, what are you focused on, the people who are attacking you or God? Nehemiah says, hey, listen, you need to focus on them. And then it's kind of cool in verse 19 and 20, he develops a strategy. If you look at 19, he says, then I explained to the nobles and officials and all the people The work is very spread out, and we are widely separated from each other along the wall. Look at verse 20. When you hear the blast of the trumpet, rush to wherever it is sounding, then our God will fight for you. Here's the picture. You never fight alone. They had a guy with a trumpet. He was by the leader. And whenever there was a place that became vulnerable, whenever they needed help, he would blow the horn and the people would come and support them physically and emotionally and spiritually. And the lesson behind that is in the Christian life, as the church, you're never to fight the battle alone. That is just so crucial. Never fight the battle alone. You keep on going. You fight together. And whenever you see a brother or sister hurting or needing help, don't think it's my job. It's your job and my job to all rally to the person who's got a weak spot. And then the last thing you see is develop a serving ministry. We need help. Look at verses 21 through 23. Listen, we worked early and late from sunrise to sunset, and half the men were always on guard. I also told everyone living outside the walls to stay in Jerusalem. He said, hey, don't go home. Stay in here. It's safer in here. That way they and their servants could help with guard duty night and day and work during the day. During this time, none of us, not I, nor my relatives, nor my servants, nor the guards who were with me, ever took off our clothes. We carried our weapons with us at all times, even when we went to water. What you see is they are intent in finishing the wall. And what they had to do, they had to slow down to work. Some people had to work. Some people had to guard. But whatever they needed, people filled in the gaps. That is exactly the way it's supposed to be in the church. I remember one Wednesday night, it seemed like everybody in the world was out of town. Greg was out of town. Sam was out of town. And you know, Wednesday night's the battle. And so we were shorthanded. And I had to teach the youth, and I had to go somewhere. Pam and Shannon were... Shannon was filling in for Sam. Pam was at a training thing. And it was me and a bunch of youth. I have to go teach the adults. And I remember going down in the fellowship hall and going, Coach, you're next man up. I said, can you sit in the gym while they play in the gym? And you know what Coach did? He went to the gym and sat in the gym with the kids. Now, mind you, Coach watched a lot of PE classes in his day, so he wasn't intimidated. But it's next man up. It's the way the church works. Next man up, serving one another. But the key thing, you have to keep going. Too many people stop. And churches die when they stop or go backwards or look inwards. You guys have done an incredible job, but we have to keep it up. Let's pray. Father, I thank everybody in this room, and I thank you that you call us to make disciples of everyone in every place that we go. And I thank you for the church, that it's a place to be enthusiastic, to do our part, whether it's passing out bulletins, whether it's making coffee, whether it's watching kids, whether it's making crafts, whatever it is, Lord, help us to understand that the church functions when we keep going and serving one another. Father, I thank you for this last week at camp. It only was possible because people were willing to go and sponsor. And Father, I thank you for those people who volunteer. May we be a church that keeps on going. We have so much to do, Lord. Help us to keep doing it. In Jesus' name, amen. We are glad.